D. James Kennedy Ministries presents Truths That Transform.
Washington, for example, Patrick Henry, another, and others refused to sign the Constitution of the United States unless there was a guarantee that there would be a Bill of Rights protecting the rights of the people from the government.
We've lost so much. We have lost the business.
It's a convolution of laws and in the state of Iowa that put us out of business.
This is Truths That Transform.
Thank you for joining us on Truths That Transform, a viewer-supported program of D. James Kennedy Ministries. I'm Frank Wright. Be sure to visit our ministry website for a wide variety of outstanding free content, including articles, video, audio, and print resources. You can find it all at djameskennedy.org. The founders of this nation highly valued religion, and especially Christianity. They wrote the First Amendment because they did not want a national church as England had, but they also wanted to protect our free expression of religion from government incursion. John Jay, one of the authors of the Federalist Papers and the nation's first Chief Justice, once said, "Security under our Constitution is given to the rights of conscience and private judgment. They are by nature subject to no control but that of deity. But in our day, the Christian's conscience is often no longer protected. In fact, it seems that it's being criminalized. How shall we, as Christians, live in this new state of affairs?" Russell Moore is one of the leading young voices in the evangelical Christian world. He's the president of the Southern Baptist Convention's Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. And I recently sat down with him in Washington, D.C. to discuss that issue. The First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution has five planks: the religion clause, free exercise, free speech, freedom of press, freedom of association, the right to petition the government for redress of grievances. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that the religious freedom portion of that is under enormous duress in our day.
It is.
The rights of conscience seem to be either ignored or be dissipated in our legal system and certainly in the culture. We're called haters for having deeply held views of conscience. What should be our position in terms of trying to defend religious freedom? Because in the end, the gospel, the proclamation of the gospel, is at risk as our religious freedom erodes. Mm-hmm. You agree with that?
Yes. And there are all sorts of things that we should do. In terms of voting, in terms of the courts, in terms of advocacy, and all of those things I'm actively involved in. But I think the most important thing that we have to do to defend religious freedom is to explain to our neighbors what it means to be motivated by religious conviction. Because many of the people who are seeking to restrict religious freedom really don't believe themselves to be in any way persecuting anyone. They just can't imagine what it would be like to believe that one has to give an account before the judgment seat of Christ or before whatever tribunal is in that particular religion. And so they assume there must really be some other motive involved. It must be about power, it must be about money, or so forth. And so we need to explain what it means to be religiously motivated people, and we need to also stand up and advocate for religious freedom, not just for ourselves, but for everyone, and to say this is not the government's business.
When Jesus stood before Pontius Pilate, he said, "I've come to testify to the truth." Mm-hmm. And so it's our work to stand in a culture that's secular and testify to the truth as well, correct?
Right, correct.
What does that look like when the government seems to be increasingly constraining religious freedom? Where is that line of us considering civil disobedience in order to be faithful, because we're citizens of a heavenly city, not citizens of a of an earthly city?
Well, I think the scripture mandates civil disobedience when we are being forced to personally sin against conscience. We cannot obey that. When the government hands down an edict that oversteps its bounds to the point that we personally must sin against God, we can't. And then we bear the consequences for that. We also participate in civil disobedience when we have tried every other means through the system in order to address the problem. And so when that happens, we have to say we obey God and not men. Thankfully, we live in a democratic republic where we do have mechanisms to work to persuade our fellow citizens to provide for religious liberty, religious freedom, freedom of conscience. But you're right, that's becoming increasingly contested in American life. One of the things we have to be keeping in mind as the people of God is the image of Jesus before Pilate that you mentioned. Jesus before Pilate says, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were of this world, my servants would be fighting." And we are standing in the place of Jesus, so we recognize that we have a kingdom that is not shakable. At the same time, we're also standing in the place of Pilate, because as citizens of a democratic republic, we are the final authority when it comes to lawmaking. And so if we don't speak out on religious liberty issues, not just for ourselves, but for everyone, then we are restricting future generations, and we are actually acting as unjust rulers. And so we keep both of those two things together all the time.
Give us some hope here. What is one thing you would tell people about the threats to religious liberty that if they understood it better, they might be encouraged to try to live out their faith?
Well, I think the main hope that we have is not necessarily anything that's happening legally or culturally, but the fact that our future really isn't dependent upon any of the decisions that we see back and forth on the news. We have a promise made at Caesarea Philippi: upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. And so we ought to be the most joyful, hopeful people, because we're not defeated. We're instead people who are on the right side of history and who will ultimately prevail. And so I think that gives us a sense of confidence. It also enables us to be patient with those who disagree with us.
Yes.
And to present a word that that seeks to know that some of the people who are hostile to us right now may well be our future brothers and sisters in Christ, and may well be the future leaders of the church. And so we should keep the example of the Apostle Paul, and of C.S. Lewis, and of Chuck Colson, and of Augustine, and so many other heroes of the faith who started out in a very different place than where they ended up.
While the kingdom of God is not ultimately subject to the laws of men, the recognition of God-given freedoms in America's founding documents has been a great blessing. The gospel is not dependent on legal freedoms, but what a great tragedy if we squander this blessing our forefathers secured for us. As my friend Dr. D. James Kennedy explains, remembering where we came from is a key to seeing how far afield our nation has gone and to bringing her back on course.
As a nation, we are suffering a severe case of national amnesia. As President Woodrow Wilson said, if we do not remember who we were, how can we know what we are supposed to be? And we don't remember. For example, one history textbook used in our schools today tells about the Pilgrims landing at Plymouth and the Mayflower Compact. And they quote the Mayflower Compact, which says, as you all know, it says that we have undertaken a voyage to plant the first colony in the northern parts of Virginia. Now, that's what it says, isn't it? That's what it says according to one of the textbooks used in our schools. But that's not what it really says. You see, they omitted several phrases without even ellipsis. And here they are. In the name of God, amen. That's where it starts. And this is how it continues. having undertaken for the glory of God and the advancement of the Christian faith a journey to plant the first colony in the northern parts of Virginia. Did they denude it of all spiritual meaning? Absolutely. Totally. Systematically, the religious character of our nation has been expurgated from our textbooks and expunged from our national memory. But Daniel Webster said, finally, let us not forget the religious character of our nation, because if that is forgotten, everything else will collapse, and we will have the kind of immorality sweeping across this nation today like a vile flood that we see on every side, every kind of vice and sin imaginable. Our fathers were brought hither by their veneration for the Christian religion. They journeyed in its light and labored in its hope. They sought to incorporate its principles with the elements of their society and to diffuse its influence through all their institutions, civil, political, or literary. Did you notice that? These were not pietists who felt that religion ought to be kept in the sanctuary. The principles of religion should be diffused through all of the institutions of our society. Let us cherish these sentiments and extend their influence still more widely in the full conviction that it is the happiest society which partakes in the highest degree of the mild and peaceful spirit of Christianity. Thus spake Daniel Webster. Well, this was the nature of this nation. And what has happened? How have we sunk so far? Well, dear friends, in 1947, a man by the name of Leo Pfeffer, an ACLU lawyer, knowing that there was a case before the Supreme Court called the Everson case, wrote an opinion. And in this opinion, he inserted the phrase, a wall of separation between church and state. That had never been in our jurisprudence before. He placed the opinion on the desk of Hugo Black. He read it and liked it. He was a very liberal judge. He ran it up the flagpole, and by 5-4, it passed. And for the first time in 1947, the idea of separation of church and state entered into our law. Now, this has nothing to do with our Constitution. There are many people who think that it does. They think that it's part of the Constitution, part of the Bill of Rights, that it's the First Amendment. It is not true. As I've often said, the First Amendment fails to mention a wall, it fails to mention separation, it fails to mention the church, and it fails to mention the state. Other than that, they were pretty close. It has been disastrous after having created this baseball bat of a wall of separation. The ACLU for over 50 years has used it to beat Christians into submission and to silence them in the public square, so that we constantly hear that. Now, you'll notice that what the First Amendment says, and note the subject of both clauses, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or, parenthesis, Congress shall make no law prohibiting the free exercise thereof. The subject of both clauses is Congress. What does it say about what you can do? What does it say about what I can do? What does it say about what we can do? Nothing at all. Absolutely nothing. It talks about what the Congress can't do. You see, the whole purpose of the Bill of Rights, and this again is probably not taught in our schools, the whole purpose of this was to tie down this great Leviathan, or to change the metaphor, this Gulliver that now had been created upon our shores of the federal government, which some of the founders believe was a great threat to the liberties of the people, which is the reason they came here. Washington, for example, Patrick Henry, another, and others refused to sign the Constitution of the United States unless there was a guarantee that there would be a Bill of Rights protecting the rights of the people from the government. And they got it. You remember a couple of years ago, we had a National Day of Prayer, and Christians were meeting, as they have for many, many years, in the community room in the city hall, and the president of the Florida chapter of the ACLU wrote a column printed by our newspaper that said this was unthinkable, unconscionable that we had prayer, oh, in a public building. He would have said, oh, dear God, but he probably didn't believe in God. Such a thing as this could not be allowed to happen. It violates the principle of the separation of church and state. And people say, I guess so. Can't have that. When are we going to wake up? Folks, when our religious freedom disappears, all other freedoms follow soon after. Let us remember who we were, that we might know who we ought to be.
As Dr. Kennedy points out, the First Amendment was designed to protect us from government interference in our religious beliefs and practices. But not only is it being twisted in our day to keep God out of public life, but we see that the government, local, state, and federal, is punishing religious conscience like never before in America. For a case in point, meet Betty and Dick Odegaard. Our own Jerry Newcomb has more.
I'm an artist, and so we wanted to find a place to display my artwork and the artwork of other Iowans. So in 2002, we bought a beautiful stone church. We set up an art gallery there, but along with that, we had also a bistro and a flower shop and home decor and a frame shop. We went along for 5 years having beautiful weddings there.
We enjoyed the business very much. This is what happens when a scientist marries an artist.
But in 2013, our lives changed forever. Two gentlemen came in, and of course they wanted to have their wedding and reception there. And we told them, because of our Christian faith, we cannot host your wedding and reception.
I don't want anyone to celebrate my sins. And we certainly don't want to be forced to celebrate other people's sins.
So then on Sunday, a business acquaintance of ours said, or emailed us and said, you must call these gentlemen back and tell them you'll do the wedding for free, and it'll be the most gorgeous wedding you've ever done. And otherwise, your business is going to go down the tubes. By Monday morning, when we got to our business, our Facebook was just the most ugly, vile, hateful, nasty things on there, as you can imagine. And we've never experienced anything like that, so it hit us really hard. And overnight, we became bigots and haters and racists and worse. And they wanted us dead. They wanted to take us down. And they certainly wanted to take our business down. How did we become haters overnight? We have friends that are gay. We have hired gay people. We've served them with no problem at all. It was the sacrament of marriage that we could not take part in.
Could you imagine the outrage if kosher caterers were to be required by the government to serve pork against their conscience, or they would be fined out of business? That's absurd. This is America, where we hold sacred the rights of conscience, as the founders put it. Yet that is analogous to what has happened to the Odegaards in this case.
What has transpired since the litigation ended? We made a business decision to discontinue all services to the wedding industry. So in July of 31st, of this year, 2015, we closed the business.
Meanwhile, the heaviest blow to the Odegaards was not only losing their business, it was also losing, at least for now, some of their family and friends.
We have been challenged by our own children. And if there's any difficult situation for me, it's realizing that your own children are not fully in your court.
Because of all of this, I went into the deepest depression of my life. I am no stranger to depression. I'm a melancholy artist. You know, it goes along with the territory. What we had put our 13 and a half years into, our passion, our baby, was taken down. And I could not come out of this depression. Well, and during that time, I really prayed to die. I feel like I was in the refiner's fire during this time. And that's where I got my strength. And he was building me up and getting me ready for the next onslaught. Because now we're not afraid anymore. And my depression is lifted. So, and I thank God for that.
This is indeed a wake-up call. One of the things we noticed during the course of our litigation is that many Christian folks lost track of, they started to wander on this subject. And Betty and I thought and prayed, what can we do to restore that truth?
And we have organized our ministry, God's Original Design Ministry. And our mission is to put up 1,000 billboards all over the nation, billboards that say marriage equals one man and one woman.
And I sincerely wish I would have been more active and more aware of how society was progressing before being hit.
We've lost so much. We have lost the business. We've lost our family. Some of them. We've lost a lot of friends who think that we've gone too far. But we know that we did the right thing. And we would do it all over again.
It's chilling to think that more and more Christians are being attacked by the government simply because their personal beliefs accord with the Bible and all of human history regarding the nature of marriage. Such a thing could only happen because Americans have forgotten the principles our nation was founded upon and because they're ignorant of biblical truth. But we have some outstanding resources to help you stand strong while your principles are under fire. Here to tell us more about them is my good friend, Jennifer Kennedy Cassidy. Jennifer, welcome.
Thank you, Frank. We see Christian beliefs coming under attack all around us, and the current president of the United States seems to take every possible opportunity to slur Christians. But it hasn't always been this way. Though Christians have been persecuted since the apostles, America was settled as a safe haven for biblical beliefs, and our nation's founders knew that Christianity was an essential component to a free society. People of all religions have had unprecedented freedom here because of our Christian base. At a time when this truth is being ignored, it's refreshing and encouraging to be reminded of it again. The little book, In God We Still Trust, by Dr. Richard G. Lee, does just that. It's filled with short daily readings from great American leaders heralding the truth of God and the Bible. It includes such great leaders as George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and Ronald Reagan. And we want to send it to you as our thanks for your generous donation. Simply write to us at Box 6085, Albert Lee, Minnesota, 56007. Or call toll-free, 888-334-9762. Or go online to djameskennedy.org. My father was a stalwart defender of religious freedom and was passionate that people understand the Christian foundations of America. This month, for the first time ever, we're taking pre-orders on the brand new D. James Kennedy Topical Study Bible. Due to be released in just days, this Bible features hundreds of articles from my father addressing issues from, does the Bible teach socialism, to is it a sin not to vote? My dad's teachings are included alongside the text of the modern English version of the Bible, an updating of the King James Version he loved. No other study Bible I've seen covers such an amazing range of issues, helping you apply them to our current situation, something my father was an expert at. You can be one of the very first to receive the D. James Kennedy Topical Study Bible as our thanks for your generous donation of $100 or more. We'll also include the 2-CD set, The Art of Studying the Bible, featuring 2 messages from my dad never before heard outside his church. That's the book, In God We Still Trust, by Dr. Richard G. Lee, for your generous donation of any amount, and the D. James Kennedy Topical Study Bible, plus the 2-CD set, The Art of Studying the Bible, for your generous donation of $100 or more. Simply write to us at Box 6085, Albert Lee, Minnesota, 56007, or call toll-free 888-334-9762. Or go online to djameskennedy.org.
The Christian church in America is facing enormous pressure to conform to our politically correct culture. And the strong arm of the law is being employed in an effort to bring that conformity about. But we must bear in mind that this is really nothing new in the history of Christianity. What's truly unusual is the American experiment in which a nation founded upon Christian principles protected religious liberty. Most of our Christian brothers and sisters have not had such a blessing. That means 2 things. 1, we Christians who are called to be salt and light should not simply roll over while these liberties are taken away. We are called to love our neighbors as ourselves. And defending our neighbors' God-given freedom is a way of loving them. This is no time for pious ambivalence. To those whom much is given, much is expected, and we dare not willingly squander such a great inheritance. And 2, we remember that no matter what comes, the Lord is with us. The gospel is not subject to human rulers. As Jesus tells his disciples, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will persecute you also. We Christians stand for freedom not only for our own benefit, but also for the benefit of others, and we must do so with joy, whatever happens. Let our attitude be like that of the apostles who, as they left the persecuting Sanhedrin, rejoiced that they were counted worthy to suffer shame for his name. I'm Frank Wright. Thanks for joining us on Truths That Transform. We'll see you next time.
Next week on Truths That Transform.
People today have little conception of what the Bible has done for life all about us.
No other country has had perhaps bigger impact of the Bible on culture than America has had.
That's next week. Today's program is available on DVD for your gift to this ministry of any amount. Please call, write, or log on to our website today. This has been a production of D. James Kennedy Ministries.